The following audio is brought to you by Summerside Community Church in London, Ontario. For more information on Summerside, visit us online at www.summersidechurch.ca.
Well, I want to start this morning. You notice that we're doing things. This is a little bit different service, a little bit different message this morning. And I want to start with a bit of a confession. And the confession is, I don't like change. Just like most of you, change is not something that comes naturally in terms of, wow, I really like things different, because we all get into routines. Like there are some things I do like change. Like if you go on your vacation and you get to the hotel and the hotel says, hey, we're really sorry, the room that you booked is not available. We have to give you the luxury suite. I mean, those kind of changes I can handle, okay? But for the most part, we get into routines. We're people of routine. We get comfortable with routines. The problem with routine and comfort is that God calls us to change. Do you realize that? God actually calls us to change. In fact, there are a couple of verses that I want to just show you. And these are just two of many that I could give you. 2 Peter 3:18, Peter says, grow in the grace and knowledge of our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ. Now, if you've planted plants this year in your garden, you expect those plants to grow. And if they're going to grow, how do you know they're growing? They change, right? Something happens and you notice there's change that's taking place. Paul says in Romans 12:2, be transformed by the renewing of your mind. These aren't suggestions. They aren't optional. If you are a child of God, if you consider yourself to be a follower of Jesus, you will change. If you are not changing, then you need to take a good look at yourself and say, am I really a follower of Jesus? Because if we truly are following Christ, we will be growing, we will be transformed, we will be changing. It's not optional. Now, you need to understand, too, that these verses are not just written to individuals. Our tendency is to read the Bible and think it's just about me. But they were written to churches, to groups of people. So growth and change is not just about me as an individual, but it's about us as a church. We need to grow in the grace and the knowledge of the Lord and Savior Jesus Christ. We need to be transformed by the renewing of our minds so that we together reflect the character of God in the way that we live out our lives. So change should be a normal part of what is expected, what it means to be a church. When you look at the early believers in the book of Acts is all about change. I mean, can you imagine the day of Pentecost comes and these believers are meeting in the temple and then they get kicked out of the temple. Now what are we going to do? So they're meeting in homes and they get persecuted. And then, new people, the church keeps growing and they have to deal with things. They have to deal with the poor people. How do we serve the poor? And they have to figure that out. And then we need some leaders, and they have to figure out leaders. And then they get persecuted again. And then God says, okay, you've got some great teachers here. I want to send them somewhere else in the world. And say, well, what are we going to do now? It's like constant change was taking place in the book of Acts because God was growing his church and things were developing. So when you think about us as a church, we need to understand that as we grow, and we should be growing because if we're fulfilling the mission God has given us, we should be growing, and things end up changing. Now, we've been blessed as a congregation. I think that's quite obvious. I was just thinking the other day, at the end of the service, we're going to be welcoming new members that were voted in our last business meeting. And I thought it was a little ironic that at the last business meeting, we voted in more new members than voted for me to come here as a pastor 24 years ago. It's like that's how much things have changed. I mean, that change happens, and it's a good thing, right? But it's a challenge for us because we get comfortable with the way things are. We like the way things are. And I expect some of you would be quite happy if our church never changed. You like things the way they are. You're comfortable. You're in a routine. I like things the way they are. Let's not change things. Let's not add too many new people because I may not like some of them. Some of you secretly are thinking that. Not me. I wasn't pointing to me, okay? But we need to have that attitude, because would it be appropriate for us to say, let's not change. Let's basically close the doors and we've got enough people. Let's just go with the people we've got. Would that be right? Of course not. Because God asks us to reach out to new people. And it's like the, you know, the parable, going out into the highways and byways and compelling them to come in. Because his room, there's plenty of room at his table, and we want to invite new people to come. And we want to see new people reach with the gospel. And if we're going to be faithful in doing that, then things are going to change, whether we like it or not. But that's what God calls us to do. So as we go through life, we're constantly challenged with this option of either trying to maintain a level of comfort or being obedient to God, and as a result, seeing change. And I think most of us here realize that we are committed to reaching new people, which means growing. Now, that poses a challenge for leadership. Because the question for leadership is, how do we expand our ministry and keep growing, and do it in a way that keeps fulfilling our mission of creating a loving community of Christ followers who worship God, serve others, and grow together? How do we do that in a healthy way so that we are doing it effectively and we're doing it properly? I can name several churches, and in fact, a couple of them here in this city, that historically have gone through periods where they grow, and then they plateaued, and then they dropped a bit. And then they grew, and they plateaued because they didn't know how to keep growing. They didn't know what to do about it. You get to a certain point, and there's a dynamic, and it's confusing. You know, it's complicated. So we need to think about where we are as a church. And this morning, I want to talk about where we are as a church and talk about some changes that are coming that in order for us to keep growing. So when you think about us as a church, we currently have about 600 people in our database. Like, these are people that have said, Summerside is my church. Now, some of you are looking around and say, okay, where are the other 300? They're at home or on vacation or, you know, at work, or there are all kinds of reasons. And there are some people, which we are very thankful for, that don't even know Christ yet. But, you know, they've come out once in a while. Maybe they come out once every 2 months, maybe, for some of them. But they consider this their church. They think, yeah, I should be a part of a church, and this is their church. And we welcome them, and we're glad that we have them. But you know, those are people we serve. And on top of that, there's probably at least another 100, and it could be, the number could be even more than that. I mean, 100 is probably just the ones that come to Play and Grow. That people that we connect with as a church that don't consider this to be their church, but we are serving them in some way. And that shows up in Play and Grow. It shows up in our kids' camps this summer. It shows up in the people that come to our fun fair, the people that we connect with through the Optimist Club, and all these different people that we are seeking to serve and we're seeking to connect with. We're seeking to help them to come along in their relationship with Christ, in a relationship with Christ. But we're trying to help them out. So you're talking about a lot of people here. Now, in order to do that, we have 3 full-time staff, about 3 part-time staff. We have some interns. And what is it that we're trying to do with all these people? Well, in this last year, we've clarified our what we call our discipleship strategy, which we call a discipleship pathway. And this is a plan that we have, and we'll put it on the board there so you can see it. It's a plan that we have to help people to figure out how we can introduce them to Summerside, help them to take the next step, encourage them to connect and engage in the mission, and then actively make disciples that are introducing people to Summerside. See how it's a cycle. But this is what we are trying to accomplish, and every ministry that we have in the church is connected with this. We want to be able to say, how is it that we're doing this? How is it that we can help people come, connect, engage, and then expand the kingdom of God? Because that's what God calls us to do. This is basically what it means to be a disciple of Christ. It's just our way of defining it and our way of laying it out in terms of how it works out. So this is what we're trying to do. And the better we do it, the more we grow. And the more we grow, the more complex ministry becomes. And the more we have to change and adapt to change. Now, along with the change is having the right people in the right place with the right skills and the right passion so that we can keep fulfilling the mission. A few years back, I had a friend who worked for Diamond Aircraft. You know, they used to make the little airplanes here in town. And his job was to take the plane up for the last test flight to just make sure everything was working before they delivered it to the customer. And so he called me once and said, "Hey, Mark, do you want to go up for a flight?" I said, "Sure." So we went up for a little test flight in his little, these are tiny little things, like sitting, you know, it's like you're, the whole plane is about that wide. You know, it's a little tiny thing. And we're flying along. He says, "Hey, do you want to fly?" I said, "Sure." So, you know, it's just a joystick. I mean, it's like playing a video game, you know. It's like you're just sitting there and it's like, yeah, just hold it straight. And, you know, flying is a piece of cake. I mean, it is. I could fly a plane. I just can't take off and land. You know, it's like. But, you know, we all have our abilities and we all have our things that we can do, right? I mean, there are things that I can do. I can fly a plane as long as it's going straight in one direction, don't have to land it or anything. But there are a lot of things that I can't do, right? And so we all have our strengths, we have our weaknesses, we have things we're good at. And it's very much like what Peter says in 1 Peter 4:10. Each of you should use whatever gift you have received to serve others as faithful stewards of God's grace in its various forms. It's like God has given each one of us abilities to serve him in certain ways. He says, whatever ability and gift that God has given you as his grace works through your life, use that to serve him as best as you can. Paul says the same, a similar thing in 1 Corinthians 12, where he says there are different kinds of gifts, but the same Spirit distributes them. There are different kinds of service, but the same Lord. There are different kinds of working, but in all of them and in every one, it is the same God at work. Now, to each one, the manifestation of the Spirit is given for the common good. So he talks about different gifts, different service, different working. Don't get hung up on the little distinctions of these words. He's just trying to say there are all kinds of ways in which God is working through individuals, and it's showing up in different ways in the body. And notice the emphasis is on different ways, different gifts, and it's God. And notice the Father, the Son, and the Spirit are all working in such a way to accomplish what God wants done through the church. Now notice here, it's not a competition between who does what, but we all have our different ways of serving so that God's will can be accomplished. And the rest of 1 Corinthians 12 just illustrates how God does that through different people and with different abilities in different ways. And the bottom line is that it is the church. And each one of us is a part of the church, and God is working through the church to accomplish his purposes. Now, here's what it means for us as a church today. As we have been growing, I have realized that we will eventually get to the point where we're going to be getting so big and complex that I'm not going to feel like I'm the right person to do that. And it will be beyond my abilities and gifts to do that. And some pastors get to the point where they stick around until the church struggles, and then the church, you know, and then the church starts going downhill and the pastor has to leave, and then the church goes through this long time of trying to find somebody else, and the church struggles more, and then they find somebody else and they have to figure out what's going on. And I don't want to see that happen. So I'm not announcing my resignation today. You don't have to worry about that. I'm not leaving. But over the last couple of years, I've been thinking about, okay, what are we going to do when we get to that point where I don't feel comfortable leading the church? And so there have been at least three books written in the last 5 years on this whole subject about pastoral transitions. And there was one of the best ones I read. I summarized it in a 10-page document. If you're interested, I can give you a copy. We discussed it as elders and discussed, okay, what does this mean in terms of our future and how is this going to work out? And that developed into an idea that I proposed to the elders. And that idea has become a plan to make a leadership change over the next year. And like I say, I'm not leaving. I firmly believe we're moving in the right direction. But we do need a new leader that's going to be able to take us to the next level, which I don't feel comfortable doing. Now, don't worry about writing any of this down. This is all going in your mailboxes as we speak. Pick up the copy as you leave today. There's a 3-page letter there explaining all this. Everything I'm saying is basically summarized in there, so you can pick it up there. Now, before I give you the plan, let me make two preliminary statements. The first one is that the changes that we're proposing are not coming because something's going wrong and we need to fix it. Okay, you need to understand that. It's not like, oh, we've got a big problem, we need to solve this problem. No, things are going very well. And it's because things are going very well, we want to make sure they keep going well. You know what I mean? It's like, because when pastors leave, there's this huge transition. It causes all kinds of problems in a church. Some of you have been through that. And we don't want that to happen here. We want to keep moving in a healthy direction. Now, secondly, as a senior pastor, it's my responsibility to lead the church and to set the direction of the church. So this is coming from at my motivation. There's no background conspiracy going on here. There's no story behind the story. You know, I wonder what happened. This is all out on the table and out in the open, and you can talk to us about it and understand any of the background that may not be clear. So this is an idea that I came up with. We talk with the elders. We create it into a plan. The leadership team have approved this plan, and we're presenting it to you so that you can understand what's going on. So here's the basic plan. The basic plan is for Pastor Devin to become the senior or lead pastor. We're changing the title just to update it. And for me to become his associate. Okay, that's the basic plan. Now, here is the time frame of how that is going to work out. For the next 7 months, from June to December, you're going to have time to consider Devin as a senior pastor, as a lead pastor. You're going to be able to observe him. I mean, you already have, right? It's nothing new here in that sense. But during that time, you're also going to have a chance to talk about it, talk to us. Devin and I would be glad to meet with you together, or, you know, with both of us together or individually, talk to the leadership, find out, you know, understand what's going on. And then in January, we're going to ask Devin to preach a message where he's basically sharing his heart for ministry. And then the following week, the congregation will vote on Devin as the next lead pastor, because that's the congregation votes on who the lead pastor is going to be. So then that's when that would take place. So we've got 7 months to consider that, discuss it, and then work it out until then. At that point, and then I would become the associate pastor working under Devin and with Devin. Now, here are the three big questions that some of you are wanting to ask right now. If you could put your hand up, you probably would. And the first question is, why the change and why now? And the answer to that question revolves around three issues. First of all, one that I've already talked about, the current state of our church. You know, we have a lot of people, we keep growing, and we want to keep moving forward. Okay, that's the reality of what we face as a church. We want that to keep happening. Second, my current reality. You know, I've already mentioned some of this, but let me clarify. Now, there's no secret cancer diagnosis that I'm dying or anything like that, okay? Don't worry about that. I'm feeling great. I'm still have a lot of energy left. I still love serving in the church. I'm not ready to retire. But I really believe that a younger senior leader would be more beneficial for Summerside than for me to stay in this role. You know, we need someone different with different gifts and different skills to keep growing. And I don't think I'm the best person to do that, to keep leading the church. Now, when you think about that, we all have those of us who are older, have the responsibility of training the next generation. You understand that, right? 2 Timothy 2:2, Paul says, "The things you have heard from me among many witnesses, the same commit to faithful people who will be able to train others." It's like we have the responsibility of training the next generation to continue leading and to carry on. I saw that when I was growing up in my father. You know, my father was a missionary in Brazil, and what he would do is he would start a church in an area, and once he got a church going, he would bring a national pastor, a Brazilian pastor in, and then dad would step back and help the Brazilian pastor to serve in that church and to effectively lead the church, and then he would go on and start another church somewhere else. And I thought that was normal. Until I started in pastoring, I realized, no, that's not the way it's supposed to be, Mark. If you're a senior pastor and then you're no longer a pastor, you better leave so the new guy doesn't feel threatened. That's the typical thinking in North America. And it's very unbiblical, right? I mean, it's not very biblical to think, well, if I can't be the boss, then, you know, nobody else is going to be the boss type thing. But I don't think that. In fact, I don't feel like I need to be the senior pastor. It's a lot of work, you know?
It is.
And not that I'm trying to get out of work. You know, and I've talked to Devin about this. I mean, you know, I could probably keep serving as a senior pastor as the church grow, but I wouldn't have the passion for it. Because the more you grow, the more complex things get. I mean, 600 people is very complex, and dealing with staff and everything gets, some people have the gifts and ability to do that, and others don't enjoy doing that. Some of you know that, right? I was talking to somebody recently who said, yeah, their boss just retired, and, you know, so I said, oh, so are you looking at taking your boss job? I says, why would I want that job? That's just, I don't want his headaches, you know, it's like, it's different. So, what I would like to do is keep serving and keep doing what we're doing here, but doing it in a little bit different way. And I would like to keep training people, especially the next generation, for ministry, because there's a huge need for that. If we want to see the church growing in North America, which it is in some areas and in our fellowship, we need to be training interns and church planters and new pastors. And I want to keep doing that here at Summerside. Now, the second aspect to this question, why the change and why now? Not only the current state of the church, but my own position, but what is it about, why is it that we would want Devin to do this? What are Devin's qualifications? Now, I have worked more closely with Devin than anyone in this room except his parents and his wife, okay? I understand that. But I have worked very closely with him over the last 3 years. And I can tell you that I believe he would be the best person to lead this church into the future. Because I believe God has given him the gifts, just as we've been reading, the gifts and abilities to do that far beyond what I have. And that doesn't mean I'm jealous. It means I recognize he's gifted in ways that I'm not gifted in. He has passions in areas I am not passionate in. When you look at our personality, we're on different ends of the personality scale. But that's a good thing, because we collaborate really well together and work well together. Let me summarize his qualifications in four categories. The first one is his character. He has godly character, is clearly a man of God, and he fits the qualifications for an elder and to serve as a pastor. He's not perfect. Okay, and his wife will testify to that. But he is a man of godly character, and I have no question about that. The second category is competence. He has the gifts and skills that Summerside needs to keep growing. We've all benefited from his ministry in preaching and teaching, and some of you experience his pastoral ministry and his leadership skills in a variety of areas. And he keeps growing in this and learning and developing that. The third area is chemistry. By that, I mean, Devin is in line with our mission and vision as a church. We have a real sense of working together as a team. You know, Devin and I are different, but we work well together. And we learn from each other and respect each other. And I would enjoy working with him and for him. The last area is capacity. Devin is very disciplined and efficient in his work. He can handle more projects than I could ever do. As you know, some of you know, he's finishing his PhD this summer. You know, he's written this huge dissertation. And a lot of that he does on the side, you know. He's written articles that are published in the McMaster Divinity Journal. Things they wouldn't even look at my article if I was publishing an article. You know, I write for the Dorchester Signpost, which is great, you know. It's like but Devin has a capacity to do things far beyond what I have. And like I said, it's not a matter of being jealous. It's great that God has gifted him, and he is responsible for that. And on Judgment Day, he's going to face more than I am, right? Because he's got far more capacity. So that's a good thing. And I believe that he has the capacity to deal with the extra responsibilities and the complexity that we face as a church as we keep growing. And that's important. But that's why I feel confident that he would do a good job of leading us. So the simple answer to the question why is that the timing is right for us as a church. It's the timing is right for everyone involved, and we have the right people in the right place to make it happen. The second question, what will actually change? Well, since Devin has been a part of shaping this ministry already, it's not like there's a lot that's going to change, because he's been a part of the last 3 years, and we've done a lot, made a lot of changes the last 3 years, and have set the direction of what we're doing as a church, the whole discipleship strategy. So it's not like Devin has a new vision that's going to take the church in a new direction. No, we have a direction we're going, and that's where we're going to be heading. We're going to stay focused on preaching Christ and helping people to take that next step in their relationship with him. So assuming that in January there's a vote of approval for him to be the next senior pastor, here are the three areas that you need to just understand. First of all, in preaching. In the past year, Devin has been preaching one-third and I've been preaching two-thirds of the time. For the next year, we're going to be sharing that half and half, sharing the pulpit 50-50. In the following year, then, it will go to me doing one-third and Devin doing two-thirds. So that will be one change. The second change would be in the area of leading. With Devin in that role, he will be responsible for overseeing all aspects of church ministry in cooperation with the elders. Same thing I was responsible for is now he is going to be responsible for that. It isn't something that you're going to see on a regular basis, but he is going to be the one making those decisions and sort of setting the vision for the future. Now, in terms of day-to-day ministry, there isn't a whole lot that is going to change in terms of what we are now doing. We're still going to be responsible for the areas of ministry we have, and I'm going to be able to keep focusing in on some of those administrative things and day-to-day things and pastoral things that will release him to figure out what needs to be done, because a part of his job is going to be figuring out how do we effectively keep serving God and reaching new people. And that's where it gets complicated, and you need to spend time figuring that out and studying it and researching it, and that's going to be part of his area. I will also have time to focus on some other areas. For example, one of the needs I would see is discipleship for men over 50. There's a big need there, and I would like to see us do more and figure out how can I help guys that are, you know, over 50 to grow. And many people are retiring in that age, and I think there's great ministry potential there. And since our strengths complement one another, we have collaborated in a number of projects over the past years, and that will continue. We'll be working together to accomplish what we need to in the years ahead. Now, the third question is basically a question directed to you, and that is, what's next? So what does this mean for you and your family? Well, let me leave you with three challenges about what to do with this information. First of all, pray. Pray that God would help the leadership work through this process. We're excited about it. The leadership team and the elders are really excited about this. But pray that God keeps us moving in the right direction and that Satan doesn't take change and distort it and cause a problem. Second, ask. Okay? You may have questions. Maybe I didn't answer some of your questions. Ask. We want to answer anything we can. Now, we don't know what the future holds in terms of 3-5 years down the road, because, you know, God's still working that out. And the pastors and the staff are leaving for a pastor's conference tomorrow morning, and then I'm taking a week of vacation. Don't think that I make the announcement I'm leaving town, okay? That's not the plan. That's not the perception. But feel free to ask. We have lots of time to talk about this. We would be glad to sit down, have coffee with you, and answer any questions you have. Share your ideas or things that concerns you may have. We've probably, you know, thought through some of that stuff, and we'll be able to share some of the ideas that we have. Talk to the elders. Ask them about their opinion, the other leadership team members. And then number three, engage. Some of you maybe aren't members yet. Why not take that next step? Maybe you need to be baptized. Take that next step in your relationship with God, because God is working in an unusual way across our world. Amazing what God is doing, even among Muslims. It's talked to David Foster just yesterday about amazing movements of God in what he's doing. Be a part of that. Get engaged. Be a part of the church. Join us in this process so that we can accomplish what God is doing.